Do you feel as if you don't belong? Do you know you were meant for something more? Well, you were. Knowledge of who you are and where you really are from is within your reach. Join Janet Carolesson and Dr. Sasha Lesson as they search for the answers as they open up the Stargate to the cosmos.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Stargate to the Cosmos. And I'm your host, Janet Carolesson, with my co-host, Dr. Sasha Alex Lesson. Our producer is Deborah DeFranco, and you're listening to Revolution Radio Studio B. So today we have a very special guest, Craig Campobasso, and he is, let me tell you a little bit about him. He's a multiple award-winning filmmaker and Emmy-nominated casting director. He was 15 when he started in the entertainment business. He started his young acting career off to a great start. He landed his first national commercial for McDonald's chicken sandwich and spoke his first line of dialogue to Tuesday Weld in a MOW. What's an MOW? We'll ask you that later. Okay, he graduated high school at age 17. He went to work behind the scenes on such blockbuster films, classics as Frank Herbert's Dune, and two Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, Conan the Destroyer and Total Recall. And he began his casting career on Steven Spielberg's Amazing Stories. He received an Emmy nomination for Outstanding Casting for a series on Picket Fences. And when his mother was pregnant, she said that she knew that Craig would become a writer. And he fulfilled that prophecy when he was 26. But we're going to focus on his, he's got a long career here. But he's got the autobiography of an extraterrestrial saga, and it's a three-part series. And he wrote, directed, and produced a short film called Stranger at the Pentagon. And I've got a full bio on him on AquarianRadio.com. His latest book is The Extraterrestrial Species Almanac, The Ultimate Guide to Greys, Reptilians, Hybrids, and Nordics, and it's going to be released on January 1st, 2021. Okay, Dr. Lesson, what would you like to say before we bring on Craig Campobasso?
I'm really interested in these pictures, and if Craig, if you'll let us use them as you rap about them, it would really be cool.
All righty, so let's start wherever you want to begin. What did I miss from your bio that you want our listeners to know about you?
Well, first of all, MOW is a movie of the week.
Ah.
So, yeah, so I've been in the film business since I was 15. I'm still in it, still casting, directing, producing, and writing. Doing various series and movies at this time, and I'm setting a new series up that I'm co-writer on, going to produce and also direct. And we are gearing up for the feature film of Stranger at the Pentagon, which is much long overdue and awaited. We are still trying to raise the funds because it'll be a wonderful CGI extravaganza, because half of it will take place up in the universe and the other half in Washington, D.C. So we will be going on board starships, motherships, Victor class saucers, seeing what all of these things look like in the inside, and the very advanced spiritual technologies. Well,
that is so exciting.
Yeah.
So tell our listeners what Stranger at the Pentagon, because some of them don't know what it is.
Stranger at the Pentagon was a book that was first published in 1967. Dr. Frank Stranges, who was a Christian minister who spoke on UFOs and the Bible. And his take on everything was more open than regular religion that pinholed certain belief systems. So he was in Washington, D.C. for 2 weeks during, at the end of December 1959. He gave his lecture. I'm gonna digress a little bit, because at this lecture, he would talk about George Adamski, and he would have photographs of the Venusian craft, and he was given a picture of Valiant Thor before he knew he was Valiant Thor by August Roberts, who was a retired Air Force photographer and a ufologist. He had the largest collection of UFO photographs from around the world. Now, August was friends with Howard Menger, and he was at the Menger farm for a UFO conference, which happened in the backyard. And he is the man that took all the pictures that day that we now know as Valiant Thor, his Vice Commander Dawn, and then another Vice Commander, Zan, Z-A-N-N, his wife, whose name was Jill, is a blonde, who is sitting next to Dawn. So these pictures were taken. August Roberts called Dr. Frank. They all lived in New Jersey, and the Mengers lived in Highbridge, New Jersey. And he brought the photographs over, and August told Dr. Frank about them and why they were different. He said that Valiant Thor did not have any palm prints or fingerprints, that it was as smooth as a boiled peeled egg, is how he always described it. And he said when he looked at you, you could feel him looking deep at your soul, and that he knew about you at a moment's glance. And he said it was exhilarating and terrifying all at the same time, because he had never experienced anything like that before. Now, Howard Menger was a major contactee visited by many human races throughout our galaxy. And when they would approach him, there was a certain handshake that they would give him to show him that they were not from here. And after the gathering that day, August went to talk to Howard, and Howard said, yes, he gave me the handshake. They are not from here. So Dr. Frank then took Valiant's picture and put it on his board, and he just told the story that I'm telling you. He had no idea who the man was, anything like that, but that he was supposedly from somewhere else. And when you look at his photograph, which can be seen, by the way, on strangeratthepentagon.com that I have up, and you see that the symmetry of his face, all of his features and everything are in perfect order. And he is, when you are in your soul perfection form, anything that as beautiful as you are within is as beautiful and as pleasing as you are without. So Dr. Frank finishes his speech that night. He is approached by a woman afterwards who identified herself by showing Dr. Frank her Pentagon ID badge. Her name was Nancy Warren. Dr. Frank made that name up in the book, just so you know, to protect her identity. And she pointed to the photo of Valiant Thor, and she said, he wants to meet with you. And Dr. Frank said, you have my undivided attention. And so they went into a back room, and she said, she went through a course of things with him and said that she would pick him up at his hotel at 8 a.m. and she was going to bring him to the Pentagon. So the very next morning, she picked him up. They drove to the Pentagon. When you're going in, at that time, when you were going into the Pentagon, she went into another lane that wasn't the normal lane, which they waved her through, because she was, she had a high classification as the head of the secretaries there. So as they're going to enter the building, she has an ID badge, and everyone has an ID badge. And Dr. Frank says, I don't have an ID badge. How am I going to get in there? And anyway, she said, just do as I do. And Dr. Frank started freaking out, and he wanted to get out of there. And he looked behind him, and there were so many people behind him, it was literally impossible. So he went with it. He got to the check post. She opened her coat to show her badge, and he just opened his coat, and he walked right on through. And he couldn't believe that he got through. And then she said, okay, we just have one more. And he said, one more what? And she said, check post. And he said, you know, once, I mean, that's a miracle. Twice, I'm not so sure. And she said, just do as I do. So he did it again. He made it through the check post. She walked him down a hallway to a door, and she said, he's in there. And she started to walk away. And he said, hey, wait a minute. How am I going to get out of here? And she said, the same way you got in. So anyway, he walked in, opened the door, and directly in front of him was a major, a sergeant. One was on the phone. One was typing. Over to the left, there was another gentleman working at a desk there. And none of them saw him, recognized him. He cleared his throat. He said, excuse me. Nobody even lifted an eyeball towards Dr. Frank standing there. So he closed the door. And sitting behind the door stood Valiant Thor and greeted Dr. Frank like we would to shake hands and said, hello, Frank, how are you? And so they sat down and they talked. And Dr. Frank said the entire time they talked, it was like as if the other people didn't even know that they existed, right? So they had a short, about a 20-minute meeting. And he explained that he wanted to meet with Dr. Frank because he was open to who he was and what his mission was. And he explained a little bit about that. Now, mind you, Valiant Thor arrived on March 16th, 1957. And we are now in December of 1959. So his mission was complete, but his departure date was the following March 16th, 1960. So he called in Dr. Frank for a purpose. And that purpose ended up becoming a grassroots way of getting who he was and what his mission was out into the public. And that's why he wrote a book. He wrote a first book, a very small book that said, My Friend from Beyond Earth, that just explained a little bit of what I just explained to you and a little bit about the meeting. And then he extended upon that in the first edition of Stranger at the Pentagon. But then as he continued his friendship with him throughout his life, He did two more versions of the book that brought in more information. So, long story short, they're sitting there having a conversation. He tells Dr. Frank some things that only his parents would know about him, one of which that he almost didn't make it at birth, and Dr. Frank did not know that. And when he went back to Jersey and talked to his parents, his mother actually went into a fit of tears and ran into her bedroom. And the father said, this is just too painful. It's too painful for her because it was reliving the memory of them almost losing Dr. Frank. So he also lit him. He had his spacesuit hanging on a chair. Valiant wore blue suits, although in the pictures they look black. It's just the way of the coloring. But they were blue suits. He always wore a white shirt and a white tie. That was his standard outfit while he was in Washington. Now,
let me ask you a question on Ed.
Yeah.
Craig, who got him his clothes? Or did he come with it?
When he arrived, it was a prearranged arrival. So when he arrived the first night, because his quarters down below the Pentagon, there are apartments. His apartment was not ready. So the first night he slept in an Army reception room on a cot. And they actually had all of his clothes ready for when they brought him to his apartment. It was lined with the suits, the shoes, the requested white ties and shirts and everything. So everything was brought to him there. So
go ahead, Sasha.
Well, did he have an expensive watch or what?
I don't know. Yeah, that watch is pretty cool. I don't know what kind of watch it is. I've never looked to see. But one might suspect that somebody might have given it to him as a gift, but I don't really know. I never asked. And of course, you know, we lost Dr. Frank, back in 2008.
Right. And so his this is a color picture. It does look black. So it must have been a dark blue. Do you know what the secret handshake was? Did you find out so you could reproduce that in the movie?
Well, I will tell you, after that, I don't know what it was in all of the notes that August Robert left, which I have. He never mentioned what it was, but he was writing a book about the whole experience, which never got published. So I've seen all of his handwritten notes and everything that goes along with it. But I always wanted to know what that handshake was. Now, people always ask me if I've ever met Valiant Thor or the Vice Commanders. And, no, I have never met them in person. Of course, I, like everyone else, would love to meet them in person. But when I was writing the script, I had an interior relationship with them, and it was a very unique experience in writing, which I had already previously experienced writing the Autobiography of an Extraterrestrial Saga books. Now it's a 4-part book series. It'll be 7 in total when it's done. So,
wow.
Yeah, so this is where Master Teachers came and woke me up and started giving me all this information. They put me through a 2-year waking up period, which they woke me up really fast, going from not knowing what duality even was, or I never even thought of extraterrestrials, but in the movies, and or even thought about Master Teachers. And anyway, at the end of this, one of the lead Master Teachers said, they had me write a book, and I wrote a 400-page book about all my experiences during that 2 years. And the Master Teacher said, what would you say if I told you you just wrote that book for yourself? I said, then I've learned a lot about myself. He said, now it is time to sit down and write the real book. And when you sit down, I don't want you to stop. I don't want you to edit. I want you to keep going and hear the words as they are being given to you and write them down until you cannot hear the words anymore. So that was the process and for writing. So when a master would come, they would come and sit inside my body, and I would go I would literally start crying because they were sharing their soul essence so I could write from their perspective.
And, you know, this is a good, you know, this is amazing because they were your dictators.
They were.
Your dictators.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So I had been through that process. So when I started writing the feature film script for Stranger at the Pentagon, the first person to sit inside my body and share himself was Valiant Thor. And I literally cried for 20 minutes because he is so beautiful on the inside that you can't help but weep tears of the most beautiful joy. And then once you get used to it and acclimated to it, then I write from his perspective. It was the same thing with all the vice commanders and with any other different thing, people that are part of their crew if they came in for a little bit. Because there's four vice commanders, there's another created being on board Valiant ship who's from Melchizedek. His name is Yaniah. And then Yaniah's associate's name is Yo, or Yeo. It's Y-E-O. And so when they would come in, you would always know who it was and when you were writing and that type of thing. So long story short, they're... I go through this entire process with them, and after I finished the first draft of the script, I gave it to Dr. Frank, and he said, I'm going to take a read, and then when the next time I see the commander, I will give it to him to read as well. And he called me a couple weeks later, and he said Valiant came to visit him. He would visit, Dr. Frank would go into his office very early in the morning before his secretary got there. That is usually when Val or Dawn or Thawne, two of the other vice commanders, would come and visit with him early in the morning or late at night as well. And... he said that he held the script and just absorbed it. And I said, did he give you any notes? And he said, no, just to tell you, good job. And I said, well, that's really strange. There's always notes, right? So I went to bed and I woke up early in the morning and like the rings of Saturn, all of the notes are spinning above my head, and I had to get out of bed, and I had to rush to the computer to write them all down. So basically, he just downloaded it into my head.
Right.
Right? So yeah. So it was quite an amazing process in writing it as writing the autobiography of an extraterrestrial saga. So... because that brings the universe, the unknown universe, here to Earth so people can understand what it's like out there with a fully conscious, united, galactarian alignment of space peoples and planets that are in conjunction with Melchizedek and the schools at Melchizedek, where it's one of its main professors is Turon, who's a 7'7" Pleiadian man with blonde hair way down his back. And he is one of the main teachers for starseeds. So he would teach incoming starseeds, and then he would teach also mighty messengers that are star seeds that come in for a purpose for the global consciousness. And the regular star seeds were raising their consciousness, which raises the consciousness of people around them. So then it goes through the whole process of how it is to become a mighty messenger is that you have to have many lifetimes on Earth as a star seed, as every single race, as every single gay, straight, bisexual, asexual, Every color, every creed, every religion, so that when you become a mighty messenger, you have the full cognition of what it's like to be of the people and for the people. That's pretty cool, right?
Who are the, are there any living mighty messengers, or do we have any names, or are these nameless people, these mighty messengers?
Well, I don't know who they would be by name, but there are many people you could call that are doing great spiritual work in the world, and it could be a part of their world that they are, and they may not even know that they're a mighty messenger, or they might be aware that they are. It doesn't really matter because they're here and they're doing the work that they're supposed to be fulfilling.
Did you have a question, sweetheart?
No.
Okay, one more question and I want to go back to your storyline. Can you tell our people who Melchizedek is? Is this the same Melchizedek that's in the Bible?
It is. Melchizedek. It's a spiritual, it's the universe's spiritual university. Father Melchizedek is the architect. In the hierarchy, it is the trine along with, say, Archangel Michael, Gabriel, and Father Melchizedek. That's where all the Living Light programs come from, and they're dispersed through Melchizedek. Now, there are a lot of Melchizedek masters. And there's Father Melchizedek, there's Macaventa Melchizedek, and Macaventa was one of the princes of the earth quite some time ago, and then Michael took it over because this planet means so much to him. So that is why this is such a unique planet in the universe, is because it's filled with such a diversity and a duality than any of the other worlds, because everybody else is united. I mean, nobody sees color. Nobody sees any of that out there. And that's why they are fascinated to learn about duality and about us as much as we are with them. And that's why even a lot of these masters and master teachers will take on a lifetime here so that they can actually experience it and add it to their soul path.
What is it that made us dualistic as opposed to synergistic like they are?
Well, there's many theories on that. I mean, if we one of the first Dr. Frank told me that he watched on the ship, they have these things called history coins. And so you go to the Library of Akasha and you download history of what you want to see anywhere in the universe. And he was shown the very first civilization here on Earth was the land of Quello. And in this land, they were all fully perfect beings. There were two societies, and at a certain point, one society started getting greedy and wanting more, and then they started fighting with the others. And then it all sort of digressed from there. Now, what I would want to see on a history coin is the history of the Earth after that and how everything sort of rolled along the decades to see how we became who we are today. And to find that, because somewhere along the way, we lost our way, or it was taken from us by other beings who removed our matrix of being fully conscious and downgraded our chakras. So there's so many different things.
So So you're saying that greed was the starting point of the dualism.
That's correct. That's what Dr. Frank informed me of when he watched that history coin. Yeah. Can you imagine sitting and watching history?
That would be cool. That would be so cool. But it's like the duality and the diversity, the duality and the self and not self, you know, the division between self and who you are, not what you don't identify with, creates this diversity. That was the catch 22. If you want more diversity, you have to have some kind of catalyst, and that was the continuum, the duality. But then there's the potential of getting into the extreme like we have right now of greed and basically disrespect for consciousness and not honoring each other anymore. So now it has to be pulled back in somehow so we're centered again, because we maximized creation through this unconscious process, and most of the other species are conscious. Okay, I digress. I had one other question. The early contactees, we're going to go more into Valiant Thor in the story, but they seem like Ralph Menser, they all seem to have, you know, visible contact, and they'd go to the big rock and they'd see them walking into the ship and there were 20,000 people there. Do you have any idea why the 1950s contacts, a lot of the early contactees were more open, and what happened that they contacted this behind a, you know, very cryptic?
Well, I studied that because I'm very fascinated with the early contactee era. And I became interested when I first went to the Integratron and learned of George Van Tassel. They were doing a UFO retro convention like George used to do at Giant Rock. But they were doing it at the Integratron, and they had asked Dr. Frank to be a part of it. So Dr. Frank called me, and we drove out there and met with the sisters who own it and with another lady who was putting it on. And I learned at that time that Dr. Frank was a part of all of those early conventions, that he used to be the MC at them. And I had no idea about that. So he shared a lot of wealth and knowledge about the early days with George Van Tassel there. I am dear friends with the last surviving person who was at the original channelings under Giant Rock with George Van Tassel when he began channeling space beings. Now, George explained it when the reason he moved to the desert is he wanted to get in touch with his inner self. He wanted peace of mind. And when he was out there, he felt like he connected to the seventh part of himself above the sixth sense, which was his God self. And he started then feeling the energies of the universe and understanding that there were other living beings out there. So he started meditating to bring them in. And he started channeling, I believe it was in 1952 or 53, and he was the very first person to channel Ashtar.
Mm.
Yes. So I actually have the original channeling that Ashtar brought through George, and my friend was there when he actually went from sitting there in a meditative mode. She said he like fell backwards, like went boom. And when he sat up, he started speaking in another tone, in another voice. And, they would explain, we are coming to you from Schneer, which was the base that was out in outer space. where they all sort of congregate when they're in this section of the universe. And so to me, that was fascinating. But what's interesting, where Salgonda was the being that met with him. So George is out in the middle of the they're in the middle of the desert. There's a hole underneath giant rock where their home is, but because the desert was so hot, they would sleep outside on cots or hammocks, right? And so he said it wasn't strange for somebody to walk up and wake them up in the middle of the night, because it was an airport and people would fly in at all times. So he stirred one night, he looked up, saw a man approaching him, and he went to go talk with him. And the man said that he would like to show George his ship. And George looked over and he saw a hovering craft. And George was an aviator. He worked for many different airline companies, including Howard Hughes towards the end. And Howard Hughes used to drive out, used to fly his plane to Giant Rock all the time to have a burger and apple pie in their little restaurant that they built, because he loved his wife's apple pie, and reconnect with George, etc. And it is said that Howard gave him $20,000 towards the build of the Integratron. So this first night, George walks over, he goes, they're pulled up into the bottom of the ship. He goes inside the ship. He meets two or three other male crew members. Salgonda talks to him about how the ship works, and he is given a download on how to build a regenerative machine, which means it would purify your cells, which is how they, like on their ships, and on the interior of planets where they live, they are able to keep a resonation field that is throughout that keeps them young and their cells refreshed. So they stay looking 30 to 35 years old for their long, long lives, which could be thousands of years old. Salgonda was 700 years old at the time that George met with him. And then over the years, he said he built the original outer structure, and it took him like 30 years to almost get it complete with raising the money. And that's why he started doing the UFO space conventions, of which all the early contactees went to. And within the, after about 5 years, there was 10,000 people out in the middle of the desert. I mean, some of the pictures from that era during that time were just amazing. It's just a sea of planes and cars and campers and trucks. And you know, they had a big scaffolding where the speaker spoke. And everyone there, anyone who was meeting with these beings were coming because they felt that they had a message to give, which was to stop the nuclear war and the atomics that started in the 40s, and to bring that message, but also that these atomics are setting the planet off kilter. It's sending waves out into the universe, and it's not helping with the other planets the way that they're set up, but it's also rippling waves interdimensionally. And this is setting the universe off balance, right? So,
okay, can we just go back for a minute? This it sounds like the orgone box. Is there a physical box? Did he actually create this thing that he was given the directions for?
He created the Integratron, which is a two-story domed building. The website Integratron. Yeah. You've been in it, right? You guys have been in it. Yeah, the Integratron out in the Yucca Valley. So throughout the years, it took him a long time, and then what would happen is you would walk through one door, walk around the inside, and walk out the other door, and you would be rejuvenated, and they could get 10,000 people through it each day, right? Now, Valiant Thor, when he came, also Venusian, right, also came with a divine design to eliminate sickness, disease, and to prolong life, which he brought to Eisenhower, and he was there to talk about many of the other world's problems and to bring Eisenhower up to date on what universal, he sort of was schooling him in the universe, right? And how it's set up, et cetera. And, Eisenhower was for it. Nixon, who was vice president, was also for it. They were very keen on helping the people of Earth. But really what it was is the rest of the military-industrial complex, of which Eisenhower gave in his departure address and talking about the dangers of it. All they wanted was Thor's organic technology to his crafts, and they did not have that in their possession at that time. They just had the crafts that they had captured that were not organic. So they turned his proposal down, which meant that how to... again, this is probably in the same vein of the cell rejuvenation, et cetera, right? And then we have George Adamski, who's also being met by another Venusian man named Orthon, which he called Orthon. I've heard different stories that Orthon was really a woman, but George didn't think that the people would be ready if it was a woman, and that he changed the name. But I'm not sure if those are true. People would have to research that. So we had a lot of contacts and a lot of other contactees that were there at Giant Rock talking about their different contacts. And a lot of them wrote books that can be gotten on Amazon. I found a few myself because I just find it fascinating. Because that was a whole era that it was all humans, and there wasn't any grays or reptiles or anything like that in sight during that whole time period.
Do they have any explanation as to why everybody, all these aliens, were humanoid?
Well, they, from what I understand from my guides and everything, is that most of the universe is human, and there are in the gray races, a lot of the gray, there's so many different gray races that haven't even come here that are fully conscious, that are all different sizes. They have their different color skin. Most of the grays have human eyes, but they have a lens sewn in because they're light sensitive. Their eyes are light sensitive because they're so big. So they sort of sew this thing in. Some have a double set of nictitating lenses, one that's like a cleaner and then one that kind of can go down as sort of like sunglasses. All races are just different when it comes to those types of things. But the good news is most of the universe is benevolent, and what we hear about with the malevolent beings stands in the forefront, because we're just we're not used to that much aggression, and that's where you know, the concern comes in, because we're like, who are they? What are they doing? What do they want? Why are they doing this to people? You know, abducting people and this and that. And, you know, you start getting into the debate, are they asking permission from the soul? Are they just abducting them against their will? I mean, that's a whole nother controversial show in itself.
Are the Greys related to the humans?
Well, there's a whole lot of different ideas about that. Some say that some humans went underground, and over time they turned into what the Greys look like. Some Greys come from the future and have mated taken genetic materials and started to create their own race as a mixture of a hybrid, and then throughout time there can be up to 7 different hybrids. I'm talking about the Sasani, which is the Bashar channelings, and then there's just so many, but it's all the same humanoid type body. It's just different eyes and different shaped heads and that type of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Sasha has a question. Go ahead.
It's not a question. It's just an embellishment. The CIA documents that Swerdlow saw said that originally the Greys were people, Lyran people, humanoids on Apis, and they went underground. That was the first thing you mentioned. They went underground a long time, and they finally got off planet. The radiation and all that, they just decided they could reproduce without doing it the way we do it, and do it just genetically in the lab. And that's just one of the many stories. You really covered it really good.
Yes, I mean, there's so much out there, and I think a lot of people don't get into what I find fascinating is the different I guess genitalia or how different species mate and that type of thing. And I found that fascinating. There has been papers written up on that. But yes, a lot of them, like
that's
you said.
Part of your new book is, I'd be very curious. I had an experience once where I was on a ship somewhere, and they brought this alien species, and I was focused on his genitalia, and I was panicking. It's like, no, I don't want that coming inside of me. Which it did.
Yeah.
But that was my only awareness of the genitalia. But that would be a fascinating study, because what was that one author she wrote about? Sometimes they could be have both sexes or many sexes.
Yes.
And sometimes you would mate in one way, and the next time you'd be the masculine, and one time the feminine, and
yes.
More than one at one time. Yeah. So
yeah.
That's a book for you there.
Well, I think it would be a very fascinating book, and I sort of go back and I wonder if the original humans were androgynous and hermaphrodites.
It's what it seems, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it seems. And then apparently the OC story, they had adapted some women that were compatible with different extraterrestrial species. These were human women, so that they could, you know, it was kind of like a brothel for extraterrestrials. So they could come and have copulate human females. It was, highly, what do you call it, popular with the
OC.
So all these stories would make a fascinating book.
Completely. So there's just so much. I mean, once you just start deep diving, you say, wow, this is fascinating. Look at this race. Look at that race. Like, in the which we're going to talk about on January 19th, the Extraterrestrial Species Almanac that comes out January 1st, the one thing that I found really fascinating was the many different ways of telepathy. I only ever saw it as talking mind to mind, but what I learned was more than I could have ever imagined and was just blown away. So we'll get into that and talk about that then. So there's a little teaser for the listeners to come back on January
19th. I'm still left in the middle of the story of Valiant and Thor, and I know that Paradise has been the target of probably HAARP attacks with fires and stuff, because Paradise was known as the place where Thor and his people stayed in California.
Paradise, California.
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
Wow, I didn't. I didn't know that. Because I know that their ship is stationed at Lake Mead, which is where they are. But they travel around all the time, so right. they're not going to stay locked up like we're all locked in our houses now. So. they don't have to.
I don't have it.
I know.
The telepathy. I just think is, you know, I've had telepathic communication with, you know, many different species, and the reptilians, it's so powerful. It feels like they're sucking your soul out of your third eye chakra and crown chakra, and some people actually die because it's so intense and so vulnerable, right? It's like nothing left.
You know what it's called? It's actually, there's a name for it. It's called telepathic hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
They get in there and they know how to take all the little pieces of your mind and bend you to their will. And that's why you feel like your entire self is being lost. But just remember, if that ever happens to anyone, that you are a sovereign being and you immediately evoke whatever you believe in. If you believe in Jesus, the word God, Buddha, Muhammad, whatever, call upon that and you say, you have no right and you must leave me alone now. And they will. And angelic forces will also come in. So
when I was 4, I started interacting with George, and George, you know, I had that soul-sucking experience, but I broke away from him, which shocked him. And he's like, how did she do that? And he kept coming back because I'd go unconscious and do it again and again and again. I was about 12, and I finally broke free from him totally. But then when I was writing about it, like you talk about how they come in, came in. It's like he sat inside me and I was just sobbing, same experience. And we forgave each other because at the highest level, we're all equal.
Yes. You know,
he might be in a reptilian form this time around, but we've been everything or will be everything.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely right.
Any relationship is two ways. And so that he is in a psi field with you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're every bit as powerful. We just have we believe at the moment that we're not, but we are. So that's somehow I accessed it. It's like, no, you're not somebody who's going to take over me. I'm your equal. And it's like, boom, he was gone. I didn't evoke Jesus, right? I was 4 years old, right?
Right, right.
You're out of here.
Yeah, but that's exactly right. All you have to do is just do, just evoke them. Absolutely. So. Mm-hmm.
So we're coming up at the first top of the hour. Do you want to give us your website, just in case you want to come back for the second hour?
Sure.
How dare you, but you can go ahead.
So people can get the Autobiography of an Extraterrestrial book series, the Extraterrestrial Species Almanac. I actually have advanced copies, so if you order them, you'll get them before January 1st. And I also have another book out on my casting side called The Silence of the Hams, a movie I made with a bunch of famous comedians from Mel Brooks to Phyllis Diller to Dom DeLuise, everybody and their mothers in it. So that's all on the website, autobiography of unet.com, autobiography of unet.com. And all things Stranger at the Pentagon is strangeratthepentagon.com. I have on there all of Dr. Frank's books that are brand new, that are out of print. I have four different posters of Victor One, the blueprints, the starship, the movie poster, and only, I forget how many, maybe 20 some left of the original book poster that I got from the thing. And we also have Valiant Thor t-shirts now because everyone's been begging me for them. So all of that can be found on that website by clicking DVD, buy books and DVD, that type of thing. And the DVD is also on there, and people can also watch the short film that I made.
Oh. Okay, back to how Norman is. Please, see you in four.
Ten.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
The future is uncertain, I know this. Death is inevitable, I know this. But one thing is certain, as free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion, and as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices, like a cacophony of thunder and lightning, and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
Hello, my name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion. You can find me on Studio B every Thursday, 1700 hours Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. It's Reality Extraction with Mr. Rowe on Revolution Radio.
When an anarcho-syndicalist communism taking its turns, sort of executive for the week, ordered of that officer and to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting. If a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs,
be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
be
more
quiet.
Major.
I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard, you've got no arms left.
Yes, I have. Look,
it is a flesh wound.
An old woman seems to be grey of courage, skill. Nerves, Gray. Stupidity.
I'll do you for that. What? Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Hey, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Things were not quite right, that everything was just ever so slightly askew.
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here. All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Aloha, everybody, and welcome back to Stargate to the Cosmos. I'm Jenna Care Lesson with Dr. Sasha Alex Lesson and producer Deborah DeFranco. You're listening to Revolution Radio, Studio B. Our special guest is Craig Campobasso. And before we get back to our show, I'd like to remind everybody to go over to revolution.radio and go up to the donation button at the top. There's a tab and make your one-time donation, or go to the Patreon button to make your recurring donation. And we do thank you very, very much for your donations, because you allow us to bring you these shows, and we enjoy being here with you. Okay, Dr. Lesson, what would you like to say?
Well, just if you've been listening to the commercials between the shows, you talk about, do you have a splinter in your mind? Well, we have a splitter in our minds. We are a dichotomous creature, and as a dichotomous creature, we generate a whole dimensions, and so that even when we, and so that I'm, that's what I'm stuck on. If it's greed that touched off all the splits that we have, and you transcend the greed, then you really just have giving and taking, and rather than banishing taking, you can span them both, and that's how we transcend. In other words, you take as well as give, instead of just taking into greed and make it demonic. And the demonic is just the rejected half of what we generate. And I think we're so interesting to other species because we generate all kinds of dimensions continually.
So, Craig, we want to continue with...
I like what you think about that, Craig.
What do you think of that? And Valiant Thor, and we want to get to the movie. So,
sure.
We got a lot to talk about. Take it away.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Sasha. I could beautifully put. And I think if we were going to boil it down in simplest terms, it's, are you service to self, or service to humanity, or service to universal kind? Service to humanity and universal kind, of course, is the same. And so it just means, are you ruling your life with your mind, or are you ruling it with your heart? So after a long period with my master teachers, I had a very big experience in Mount Shasta, and where my masculine and feminine energies were split, and the great I Am spoke that said, you are to be what we are in thee. And when I was fused back together, I noticed at that point that I actually had a heart indentation on my forehead. So this was the heart merging with the mind, right? So I think that's a great way of looking at it, that even if you're battling and you're going crazy on the inside because you just want to let that beast out, you have to learn how to sit down, how to meditate, how to work out that situation to its fullest benefit for all parties concerned, no matter what your views are towards the other party. And if that's going to take a cooling off period of a month or two, a year, whatever it is, then that's what you need. There is all the time in the universe. And, you know, when I was younger, I wanted to make everything right away and get it off my plate. And my guide showed me over the years that doing it for the benefit of all instead of just myself was more beneficial. And so I try to live my life like that. Look, we're all flawed. We're all here, but we're all doing our best. But as long as we don't become reactionary and we think about all parties, that is how we spiritually grow and learn and escalate and ascend to the next dimension and up and up and up and up and up. So what did you want to talk about next?
Well, we didn't finish with the Valiant Thor story, because I asked a lot of questions.
Sure.
But it's all perfect. And then you have the movie that's coming up, Strange in Pentagon. We did see the previews at a couple, or the short, what do you call it, the short film.
The short film,
so we
yes.
went, yep.
Yeah.
And then we've got your extra saga series.
So yeah, we'll talk about that after that. So people can, like I said, they can watch the short film at strangeratthepentagon.com, or if you have Amazon Prime, it's free to watch with Prime. You just type into the search bar Stranger at the Pentagon and it will come up. So what part of the story, I'm just trying to think of what part of the Valiant Thor story that...
Why is he still here?
Yeah. So he left on March 16th, 1960. He went away for a year. He returned on March 16th, 1961. He did get in touch with Dr. Frank and they again began their friendship. And in 1967, he was invited on board Victor One, which is Valiant Thor's flagship. So there's the Victor One class saucers are Victor One, Victor Two, Victor Three, and they go all the way up and they monitor 287 locations in, on, and above the Earth. And they have super biological computers that give them stats on every living creature and their consciousness at any given point. All they have to do is tap into it and see. So they can also keep tabs on evildoers in the world of who they are watching to see. They can also, without invading their thoughts, they can see... intention. It's strange that there is also a classification of angelics that can cast their consciousness into the universe to see even if an angel is waning in their own belief system, and if they are, they will go to them and try and help them work out whatever they're going through so that they don't go down a wrong path. Because as we know, even angels can be swayed away from their deeds and can descend into greed, as we know from the stories. So anyway, so Dr. Frank was in contact with Valiant Thor for the rest of his life, all the way through, I think he passed on November 17th, 2008. He called me the day before, and I knew it was just going to be the last time I talked to him. He was crying on the phone, and he was saying, "Please don't forget me, brother. I love you. I love you." And I was, you know, it was a very, very hard time during, you know, losing him, because he really became like a second father to me.
Oh.
Yeah, really and truly, and he really was a truly gentle, kind soul. So, and he loved everybody. I mean, Valiant taught him so many things, you know, about the universe, and the way that they think, and their open minds, and you know, a lot of it towards, you know, a lot of the things that I guess religious factions don't want people to do, and that kind of things, you know, like sexuality and that kind of stuff. So you know,
what is different that they believe differently than we do,
what is their relationships like with each other?
Do they have monogamy or polyamory, or, you know?
Well, Val is married to a woman named Dina. They had a daughter, I believe, in the 70s, and they named her Val Dina. And she is on the ship, or she's on the mothership or the starship, or traveling around. As far as I know from Dr. Frank, that they were monogamous. And but in the rest of the culture, as it was explained to me when I was doing the Turan books, is that it is everyone's choice if they want to be in monogamy, if they want open relationships. And they said a lot of people opt for open relationships because of this reason, that they are fully conscious, they are aware when another soul who is a part of their soul history comes in, that if they want to explore that love, whether it's in a friendship or in a relationship, that the mate of that person would never not allow it, because they are always there to make sure that they are happy and fulfilling their self. Now, imagine if you're going to live 2,500 to 5,000 years, you're not going to last with one person. Right. So this makes sense, and it makes sense that after a while, if you're with somebody for 200 years, you're like, you know, honey, could you go find somebody for a while? Or, you know, I know a lot of women that do that with their husbands here in L.A. Honey, go to Vegas. You know, just go have fun. Go to Vegas. Leave me alone. Right. So.
Wouldn't they want to diversify their gene pool, you know, mix and match, or aren't they?
Oh, they have all of that. Yeah. There's so many colors. There's so many beautiful colors of skin. They actually gave me a wonderful saying way in the beginning when I was writing the Turan books. They said, like the floral bouquet, we are all the arrangement of God. You know, talking about the skin colors, because every color you can imagine is on the color of a skin. And a lot of it is due, Dr. Frank told me that Val told him, was due to the suns in their particular area of space that it had to do something with the pigmentation, right? So he told me that when he was on the starship, he saw people with patterned skin. He saw people with rainbow flesh. He saw people of every color. I think a lot of the common ones are blue, a lot of different shades of blue. There are violet, a lot of violet people as well. And then a lot of, like Syrian and that are different brown colors and, things like that. Pleiadians, can also be, you know, very white skinned and they can go on, but there's just like us on this planet, you know, there's interbreeding with all the different species and everything like that. I mean, if we could probably isolate our DNA, we would find that we had star genes going way, way back somewhere. In the ET almanac, I get into of a lot of races that came here and seeded also on this planet. So we probably have some of those long, genes that go way back as well. So we all came from the same place and, in the diversity and in the different colors. I mean, it's really a beautiful thing when you think about it. And,
it is
just completely beautiful. So,
I was at a huge meeting of 100,000 unique species. No two were alike. They didn't have more than one representative of each species. And they were all bipedal with some kind of face and some kind of arms and some kind of legs, some kind of hands. And they said, this is only a small representation, you know, of all the beings, of sentient conscious beings in existence. And we're just kind of showing you those that are closest to you because they're really careful about freaking out the contactees. They don't want to overwhelm you and give you, you know, something that you can't handle and integrate.
That's right.
But I saw 100,000 and they would come down and kind of project an avatar. They were up in a big arena and they project the avatar to stand right in front of me. And somehow they would match my height as out of respect for me, so we would look in each other's eyes. And like you said earlier, that seeing into their eyes, it's kind of like takes your breath away. And it's so beautiful that all you can do is like tears run down your face. It's like a intergalactic puja, you know?
Yeah.
And just remember, you can put your face right down in front of your dog or your cat, and they look so different than you, and you love each other. If you can remember that, you can meet anybody and anything, eye to eye.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And it'll be an amazing thing once the consciousness here shifts to being fully conscious, and that there'll be ambassadors, there'll be teachers here that will be schooling everyone in the universe. People will get to start to go away to other worlds and learn. We'll be able to go and become crew members on ships like Valiant Thor's ship, for instance. The main crew is Valiant, Dawn, Teal, Thawne, Zan, Yanaya, and Yeo. And then the rest of the crew, of which there is the entire crew is 200 on this 1,300 feet in diameter craft. Those members are changed out every 3 months. And then they go to a different craft and they switch to a different job. So everyone is learning a different job on a different craft under a different commander. And there, everyone just really wants to learn, and because they live to be so long, you're considered a young adult until you're 70. You're not considered an adult until after 70.
Oh, you're just a baby, honey.
You're just a baby because you're there's so much to learn and to put into your mind there, but your mind is fully conscious. It's working at 100%, where here, Sasha, what is it, 33 and a third? Is that what we use?
It's really a small percentage, but it's like this same capacity that you're talking about with the ETs, is you can get things. You don't have to have pictures or voices talking. You can get the whole thing in an instant flash, and you can do it deliberately as a meditative device if you really want to. Consider the inside of your eyelids to be a screen and go into a deep state and just let whatever is appropriate for your growth come to you.
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of my EP contact is concepts. It's like people go, what did they say? It's like, well, it's not really words. It's like I got this entire concept, like a whole book downloaded at once, and now I have to translate what they said.
Absolutely. But, that's right. Yeah. That's right. That's absolutely right.
This movie, when are we going to have it? Is there any time frame? We can raise the funds for you, Patreon?
We're trying to raise the funds, and everything is done. The movie is written. Everything that has to be done with the movie is done. We have the big entertainment attorney who will be fielding all the offers and setting up the escrows with investors, who will also be our production attorney. They have done over 500 studio films as well. And then we really just have to go and go into pre-production and start shooting. But we will be CGI heavy. So right now we can make this movie anywhere from 25 to 32 million. And if we really wanted to go whole hog, we could make it for 50 million, right? You can always make movies on for lesser, but then you start losing your star power, you start losing a lot of different things. So I would like to make it in that range from 25 to 32, because we can make a really good movie with really good CGI, because there will be shots in this movie like no one has seen before on board the crafts. It's going to be absolutely amazing.
So who if you had everything you wanted to, who would you cast for this film?
Well, for Valiant, I would like either one of two people. One is an actor named Lee Pace. He looks very much like Valiant. He starred in the Peter Jackson Hobbit movies. He was the head elf. He was also, I think he was Ultron in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. He's always sort of in makeup, but, he starred in a TV show called, Pushing Up Daisies. He was in, the vampire movies, the famous ones with the three kids, Twilight, those movies. And of course the other one was somebody that you and I talked about a long time ago, Janet, is Benedict Cumberbatch.
Please get Benedict and let me have a photo seat.
Please. Yeah. And then of course, interestingly enough,